Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Monday, July 31st, 2017. I am Jason Powell, and coming up after the break for non-members, my full review of Monday's WWE Raw. WWE Raw was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania at PPG Paints Arena, the road to SummerSlam continuing. They gave away a big triple threat match with Roman Reigns facing Braun Strowman and Samoa Joe. They had Roman Reigns defeat Samoa Joe in that match. And as we get into this, I will end up telling you why that might actually be a good thing as far as Samoa Joe is concerned. So stick around for that. Plus, they closed the show with Big Cass facing Big Show, a match I thought they might be saving for SummerSlam. They gave it away on Raw, and boy, this live crowd was anything but live by that point in the show. They were very flat for the women's match that preceded the actual TV main event, and the Pittsburgh crowd, I don't know if you blame the product, I don't know if it's the three-hour marathon nature of Raw and just not having that true, you know, hot main event, the bigger of the two matches, save for last. I don't know what it was, but Pittsburgh kind of petered out here before, I would say, for the last 30 minutes or so of the night. Kind of hard to blame them. I mean, Big Show, Big Cass, they've been building to it. It just hasn't really connected in a major way yet. But having said that, let's work our way through this. We have a lot of ground to cover here. They open things up with a recap video, and then Michael Cole, Corey Graves, Booker T were on commentary. JoJo was the ring announcer. Hometown boy Kurt Angle came out, the Raw general manager, and he delivered a brief speech to the Pittsburgh fans and welcomed them to Raw and said he had an incredible show planned with SummerSlam implications. And he talked about, this is where he announced Big Show against Big Cass. I don't believe there was any announcement for that match before the show started. I may have missed something late. I think the only thing, well, I mean, we knew about the Triple Threat. We knew about Miz TV with Jason Jordan. And then I know they announced late in the day that Angle was actually going to open the show. But I don't recall hearing anything about show against Big Cass. That said, from there, he talked about it being the 21st anniversary of when he won the gold medal. And he basically was out there to say, you know, it's going to be a great show, blah, blah, blah. And he started to leave when he was stopped in his tracks by Brock Lesnar's entrance music. The Universal Champion and Paul Heyman both walked out, headed to the ring, and Heyman did all the talking here. He talked about how he understands the strategy and the angle that Angle is playing. He said that Angle has to get the title off of Brock Lesnar. That's why he booked him in the four-way match. And he ran through Lesnar's four-way challengers and kind of, you know, basically talked down about them in a way, just making it, you know, compared to Lesnar, not just bad-mouthing them. Well, I guess Samoa Joe, kind of the ongoing thing, is that Heyman bad-mouths Samoa Joe and doesn't respect him because of his attack from behind and things of that nature. And he says, why don't you just rename this pay-per-view or rename this SummerSlam 2017 Brock Lesnar Loses the Title? He accused Angle of being told to make Lesnar pay the ultimate, as he emphasized, price, and he said that if Lesnar loses the title at SummerSlam, he's gone. He leaves WWE, and Heyman's going with him. And he said that the thing is, Lesnar's not going to lose the championship at SummerSlam. I really like that as far as a hook for SummerSlam is concerned. Now, we don't know what they have in mind for Brock Lesnar. I mean, the signs are certainly pointing toward a match with Lesnar and Jon Jones in UFC. That said, you know, Lesnar still has to re-enter the USADA testing program. There's some time left that he has to serve as far as that suspension is concerned. So basically, it's gonna be a while. So is this a hint that, well, Lesnar's going to retain the championship at SummerSlam after all? Is this a sign that, well, he's going to be taking some time off? I'm not sure, but here's what I like about it. Without knowing where this is all going, it is a great hook for SummerSlam because now you're left wondering, all right, what's going to happen? You know, do Lesnar and Heyman leave? And if you believe the way Heyman was laying it on initially, I mean, he came around to saying that Brock wasn't going to lose. The odds are so stacked against his client, Brock Lesnar, that you're likely to see a title change. You know, so, I mean, he kind of delivered mixed messages there, as he should have. I mean, he played it really well, playing into the idea that Lesnar doesn't have to be pinned or submitted in this match, and he can still lose the championship. The odds are really, you know, the deck is stacked against him, basically. But he's still going to win. He still has confidence in his client. But if he doesn't, they're gone because they consider this to be unfair. And so a really good promo. I like, again, just kind of the hooks that it provides for that already big SummerSlam four-way main event. From there, we got the broadcast team hyping the Hardy Boys as they were shown backstage. They went to a commercial. As far as the SmackDown hype for this show, it's a big addition. Shinsuke Nakamura facing John Cena. Winner challenges Jinder Mahal at SummerSlam for the WWE Championship. And we're also getting AJ Styles against Kevin Owens for the U.S. Championship on the same show. So WWE really loading up Tuesday SmackDown. Of course, you can join Jake Barnett for live coverage as the show airs at ProWrestling.net, 7 Central, 8 Eastern Time. Coming out of the commercial break, the first match of the night was the Hardys, Matt and Jeff, defeating Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson in 9:05. They got their win back. They had the Revival, Scott Dawson, Dash Wilder, sitting on commentary. And they didn't get involved in the match. It was simply the Hardys with Jeff hitting a swanton going over. But then after the match, the Hardys go to the stage and they're celebrating their win. They end up fighting with the Revival on the stage. And then Anderson and Gallows joined in on that as well. The Hardys ended up clearing Wilder and Anderson from the stage. And then they hit two Twist of Fates on Dawson. And then Jeff ran, leapt off the back of Matt, who had kind of got down on all fours for him, and dove onto Wilder and Anderson, who were off stage at this point. So a big momentum boost type of moment for the Hardys. They've been losing some matches lately. Now, I thought it was all leading to the Broken Universe, and maybe WWE did too. I'm not sure. Where I think this is going now, you know, regardless of the whole Broken Universe thing, if you missed it over the weekend, Ed Nordholm indicating that he's done talking about it. I mean, I guess that's what you... There's a couple ways of looking at that. Number one, well, it's what you say if you want to drive a hard bargain, or it's what you say if you're being truthful. You know what I mean? So I'm not quite sure. I would think that if you called up Ed Nordholm and said, hey, I will pay you $1 billion for the rights to the Broken Universe, I think he'd go for it. Obviously, that's not, you know, what's going to happen. I'm just saying that you can say talks are done, but everybody, as a guy once said, has a price. So I guess we'll see if what happens. But as far as where I think this is all going, as far as SummerSlam is concerned, I'm hopeful that it's going to be a triple threat with these teams. I mean, I would be fine with the Hardys against the Revival. Anderson and Gallows were baby faces against the Revival before. I think there's a reason they had them getting that mix on the stage. I could be mistaken. But I think the tag title match is not going to involve these three teams, and I'm fine with that. I think we're looking at Sheamus and Cesaro defending their titles against Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins. And I hope that's the case. I don't need a five-way gauntlet match or anything just to get all these teams on the show. Go ahead and break them into two matches. I think there's a good way to get them all on the show that way. And then you get, what should be a really interesting match with Ambrose and Rollins challenging for the tag titles, given their current storyline, which we'll talk about here, in fact, in the next segment, because Renee Young interviewed Dean Ambrose backstage. And she showed him some footage of him leaving Seth hanging last week as Seth was hoping to bump fists and all of that. And Ambrose admitted they looked pretty good out there. Rollins showed up and said last week was special, and it felt like old times. And Ambrose said that he doesn't trust Rollins, and he had his eyes in the back of his head last week. And he said that as much as the WWE Universe and even a small part of him wants it to, he was burned by Rollins once, and it's not happening to him again. So Ambrose still very reluctant. Last week didn't change anything. They went to a commercial. They showed, like, the NXT preview. I don't think they advertised an actual match. It was just all about Aleister Black. So I thought that was kind of cool. Getting a little bit of a teaser for fans somewhere down the road when he finally makes his way to the main roster. But in the meantime, making him seem special at the NXT level, which he is. Then we went to Rollins backstage, where he was approached by Sheamus and Cesaro. They were kind of gloating about Rollins being left hanging by Ambrose again, and they talked about how they couldn't stand each other initially, yet they're now tag team champions, and they mocked Ambrose for not trusting him or anyone else ever again. Sheamus said they couldn't even be on an episode of Ride Along. Cesaro said the new show could be called Ride Alone for Seth Rollins, but on bump. And Rollins then got fired up. Apparently he didn't like that name. And he challenged either one of them to face him in a singles match. And Sheamus was the guy who stepped up. And we found out that match would be coming up a little bit later on in the show. So yeah, I think that with what we saw here, and even a little bit more with Ambrose and Rollins later. I mean, it certainly seems like they're building toward that those two are going to end up going for the tag titles. Now, we're getting closer and closer to SummerSlam. There's not a whole lot of time left, so I thought what we saw later in the show might have been the thing that made Ambrose say, okay, let's do it, but it wasn't. So more on that still to come. We found out from Michael Cole that Ari Daivari will face Akira Tozawa on 205 Live. The winner of that is going to get a shot at the Cruiserweight Championship at SummerSlam. John Moore's review of that will be available of 205 Live will be available on Wednesday morning. And then in the second match, it was Akira Tozawa, Cedric Alexander, and Rich Swann defeating Ari Daivari, Tony Nese, and TJP in 8:45. Tozawa still selling the shoulder heavily. In fact, before a commercial break, he was selling it, and Titus was checking on him again. He's already thrown in the towel, essentially, for him once, and so he was checking on him again here, but Tozawa was screaming that he was okay, and he ended up performing a senton bomb on TJP and pinning him clean to win the match for his team. Crowd a little more into this than some of the Cruiserweight matches. It helped that, you know, realistically, it just was a couple of big high spots. You had Alexander and Swan teaming up for stereo flip dives, and then you had Tozawa performing his own suicide dive, and the crowd was reacting to that. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know that the personalities are all that over. I'm still waiting for them to do a little something with Cedric Alexander when the time is right. I mean, I think it's cool Tozawa's in the program with Neville right now. Titus being a part of it still doesn't do anything for me. But I do think that assuming that Neville ends up retaining the championship, I think at some point we will get him and Alexander, and it should be very good. I look forward to that. Hopefully it's not just something that they choose. Well, let's give it away on 205 Live. It's kind of a meaningless match. Hopefully they're thinking ahead here, and they know who's next in line. Again, assuming Neville's going to hold on to that championship. And if Tozawa is going to win it, here's what makes me think he's not. What heels are there other than Neville right now that have been positioned in a meaningful way in the Cruiserweight division? Really none. I mean, you can start building someone, but I think they have some. One of the reasons I liked Neville in the first place as champion was because I think they just have more. It seems like more baby faces on that roster that fans take seriously than the heels at this point. Coming out of a commercial break, it was time for the Miz TV segment. It was he had Miz out there along with Maurice Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel, and Miz was, I think, the first person to tear into Pittsburgh. Usually you don't hear the hometown, you know, somebody will make reference to it. Sometimes if they're in other, you know, smaller cities, they might just ignore it completely. But here you had Angle, of course, playing to his hometown crowd. Elias Sampson, who's now just Elias, he played to his hometown crowd in a heelish way. Miz healed on them. Just seemed like that. Pittsburgh was being mentioned more than most cities do during a typical episode of Raw. But I can't tell you how much I hate this city, Miz started. Got some easy heat. He introduced Jason Jordan as his guest. What is with WWE's new entrance music? Because Jordan's is really generic and bland. And then Big Cass had kind of a temporary type of entrance theme when he first turned, and it looks like now we're getting what I assume is the one that they intend to go with, and it's really not any better. It's just, it's also pretty flat. Miz ended up asking Jordan how it felt that some fans are booing him. Did I miss something? And this was at the top of the second hour. Now, maybe they did it when he was making his entrance, and I just didn't hear it, but ears still ringing. If you're wondering why this audio show is so late, I attended Guns N' Roses on Sunday night. Was up very late. I'm very tired. So I decided to hold off and do this now. I'm a procrastinator. So I may have missed something if the ears are ringing and missed some boos in there. But Jordan said the fans are going to boo, cheer, and do whatever they want to do, and that's cool. He said Miz is the expert on being booed. And Miz like, oh, you want to play it that way. He ended up praising Jordan's in-ring ability and then offered to guide his career as a member of the Miz Sharage. And Jordan said, thanks, but I'm good. And Miz boasted about appearing on television and movies and main eventing WrestleMania. And he said he could help Jordan navigate the WWE waters inside and outside the ring. He said Jordan needs his help. And Jordan said, you know, it's a tempting offer, but I'm still going to pass. And then Miz accused Jordan of being able to get anything he wants anyway because his father is the general manager. Jordan defended himself and said that he told Angle he didn't want any special treatment. And Miz said that the company will chew him up and spit him out. And Jordan said, maybe it will, but he didn't want to be associated with someone like The Miz. And Miz then went off on Kurt Angle, calling him a washed-up old jock. And he said he got his job out of pity. And he said Angle wasted the best years of his life. And it's no wonder he's from Pittsburgh, because he's sad, broken down, and pining for the glory days that are never coming back. Jordan got fired up here, and he said that Miz can say what he wants about him, but it's but if he said another word about Kurt, then he would make him regret it. And yes, he used the name Kurt, so he's not calling him dad or anything like that, just to clarify. Miz acted like he was calming down the Miztourage, but then he tried to take a cheap shot at Jordan, who saw it coming, and ended up performing an overhead belly-to-belly suplex that launched Miz onto Dallas and Axel. And so Jason Jordan was able to leave the ring without the heel trio doing anything to him physically. I came away from Miz TV feeling like, unless something just clicks with Jordan as far as his mic work is concerned, and it's going to take him really getting over in the ring. You know, and he does have some, I guess, explosive offense that the fans do seem to react to certain moves that he performs and things. So I'm not ruling that out. But right now they have him playing like just this sappy, nice guy babyface. And it kind of feels like it's from a different era almost. You just don't see this. Usually your babyfaces today have an edge to them, and he's just this, he's basically portrayed as this nice kid. And we've talked, you know, hey, this could be some ruse, and he's not a nice guy after all. But right now, as things stand, he is coming off like this very nice kid. He doesn't like it when people insult his storyline father, Kurt Angle. But otherwise, he's pretty mellow. And there's not a lot of charisma there when he's talking. He just doesn't seem comfortable in this setting just yet. But very good in the ring. And so I do wonder if that's what it's going to take for him to really click. It's just really winning people over with what he does in the ring, as far as his matches, getting a key victory over someone if they lay something out that way. I do wonder if Miz is the opponent now. It feels a little quick for Jordan, who is essentially supposed to be climbing his way up the ladder, to be thrust into the IC title picture. But hey, I mean, if they feel like it's the direction to go in, I'm not going to complain about it. It just kind of seems like, you know, last week it was Curt Hawkins, and now he may or may not be feuding with the Intercontinental Champion. Miz doesn't really have anything going right now, because it looks like Rollins and Ambrose have kind of moved on to other things, and so maybe it is Jordan. In the third match, it was Seth Rollins defeating Sheamus, who had Cesaro with him in 8:15. He ended up knocking Cesaro off the apron, and then rolled up Sheamus and pinned him. But after the match, the WWE Raw Tag Team Champions ended up putting the boots to Rollins. They were about to leave, headed back to dish out even more punishment. That's when Dean Ambrose finally came running out to make the save. He was quickly outnumbered, though. Cesaro performed the neutralizer on Ambrose, who then motioned for more. Cesaro obliged, ripped his shirt off, and wrapped it around his face. I'm like, oh my God, are we getting a necktie moment here? But no, he kept it so it was like covering his mouth, and he held him in position. And then Sheamus ended up catching him with a brogue kick. And I think most people know what I'm talking about when I say the necktie situation. Justin Roberts being choked by Daniel Bryan with his necktie. And that led to Daniel Bryan being fired by WWE at one point, as crazy as that sounds. But it was not that. He definitely did not have the shirt around the neck. So I think Cesaro's job is safe. And this was the point where I really did think, okay, now both guys have been laid out. Now Ambrose is going to be like, you know what? Still not 100%. Still not sold on this and still not trusting you, but to hell with it. Let's do this and be out for revenge, that sort of a thing. And it didn't happen. More on that in a little bit. I thought it was, I was pleasantly surprised that they didn't just decide to rush into this. We got a Samoa Joe video package. They did this for Roman Reigns earlier. I think I breezed over it. Basically, they gave all three guys in the triple threat a chance to talk about facing each other, facing the possibility of facing Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. They were okay. The video packages were nothing really bad. It just they didn't really grab me in a major way either. They didn't really enhance it really increased my enthusiasm for the match, if you will. Then we had Graves hyping Bray Wyatt for after the break, And the broadcast team then was shown at their desk, and they set up the latest Special Olympics video package with their partnership with the Special Olympics. And this one was on a young man named Justin J.J. Jones. And then he was shown very excited in the live crowd. So that was kind of a cool moment. They came back from a commercial break, and we had Bray Wyatt in the ring for a promo. Or actually came out. He got his full entrance. And, kind of your typical Bray stuff, talking about there's no escape for your children or Finn Balor. He said he saw Balor for what he truly is, the putrid shell of a man who never was. And then he mocked the notion of being able to fall down only to get back up, and he started laughing maniacally. And he said there's no getting up when the eater of worlds knocks you down. And he said there's also no escape. He dropped the mic and then struck the crucifix pose, and that's when all of a sudden you heard a drum a couple of times, and it's like, oh, no, is this like a special entrance? Are they really going to have the demon come out here? It feels way too soon for this. Unfortunately, that's not what they did. I'm guessing we get the demon persona that Finn Balor has at SummerSlam. It's going to feel a little rushed at this point. I mean, we'll see what they do over the next couple of weeks. Maybe they'll make me eat my words there. But right now, this feud doesn't feel like it's intense enough to reach that point where you would think, okay, Balor's kind of going into that mode. But again, things can happen in the next couple of weeks. We'll see. But it was just Balor coming out. The lights went out, actually, and he ended up in the ring behind Bray Wyatt with his back to him. Bray Wyatt turned because he's looking at the stage and saw him, thought he could go for the cheap shot. Balor delivered that cool overhead kick that he does, ended up clearing Bray to ringside, and then drop-kicked him over the barricade, and then Balor's music played he played to the crowd to end the segment. So right now, it's two guys playing games with the lights. It was okay. It's not high on my list of likely SummerSlam matches in terms of my excitement level or anything, but it's okay. Well, again, this is one that's just kind of starting up, so I don't want to be premature in judging it. Let's let this one play out over the next couple of weeks, and as we get closer to SummerSlam, hopefully they can start getting us a little more excited about this. This is where we got the Braun Strowman video package, and then we had a little bit of hype for that triple threat as coming up next, and they went to a commercial. And before I get into the full rundown of that match, I just want to take a quick moment to tell you about .NET Membership, the ad-free version of ProWrestling.net, both the website and the mobile version of our website. The .NET members today are listening to my Q&A audio show. It was recorded on Monday afternoon. I answered their pro wrestling questions at the beginning. On the back end of that, we talk some non-wrestling. We have a good time with that. That is the Mondays when ProWrestling.net Live isn't on. And there's an entire archive filled with Q&A audio shows if you want to go back and listen to some of those. But also the .NET Weekly audio show where I get together with a guest and we discuss all the news of the week. Oftentimes it's a member of the staff. Sometimes it's other personalities from within the world of pro wrestling. Last week was former WWE creative team member, current, once again, MLW promoter, Major League Wrestling's Court Bauer joined me. It was good to catch up with Court and have him on the show. You guys heard on the All Access side, you heard him discuss the MLW one-shot show. And the members actually heard Court for an hour to just discuss current events with me, and so it was a really good show. Again, membership is you get the ad-free version of the site, all of our audio content. If you enjoy this full-length review of WWE Raw, know that I do this every Monday. Sometimes you guys hear them here on the All Access side, but they are there every week for the .NET members. Same with our SmackDown audio reviews, NXT, 205 Live, Ring of Honor, Global Force Wrestling / Impact Wrestling, whatever the hell they're called this week. They are all there for the .NET members, along with the audio reviews of all the major pay-per-view events. And if you are interested in membership, very simple. Visit the main page of ProWrestling.net, click into the sign-up area, and you will find three different pricing options. $7.50 gets you in the door for 1 month. If you want to save yourself some money, take a look at the annual or even the six-month option that we have available. And again, as I like to remind you, that annual option brings the price down an average of $2 per month. Again, all the details available at ProWrestling.net. If you have any questions, feel free to email me directly at .netjason@gmail.com. Just spell it out, .netjason@gmail.com. Or follow me on Twitter, at ProWrestlingNet. Feel free to ask me any questions you have right there as well. So coming out of the commercial break, it was time for the triple threat match. Kind of You had Joe coming out first. I did notice he had his left elbow taped, and then Strowman came out. The usual reaction for Reigns, pretty heavy boos, some fans cheering him. I did kind of get, I always chuckle when you'll get a crowd that, you know, some crowds are a little Roman friendlier than others, but there's plenty where there's some serious Roman hatred. This was one that it seemed like there were far more boos than cheers. And so they find the one lady holding up a Roman Reigns sign and focus on her while you hear the crowd booing. But it was Roman Reigns getting the win here, and he did so at the expense of Samoa Joe. He ended up defeating Samoa Joe and Braun Strowman in 14:25 in a triple threat. I thought they did a good job of establishing that, you know, even as these guys were fighting into the crowd and things, that there's no DQs, there's no countouts, and the rules are essentially the same for the four-way. Coming up at SummerSlam, that we're going to get with these three all challenging Brock Lesnar for the championship. So they did a good job there. It was a good, really good television match. I enjoyed it from just the, you know, the super heavyweights going at it like they did. I thought they did a good job of establishing Joe's coquina clutch. He applied it on Braun Strowman at one point, and it wasn't Strowman just powering out of it. It was, in fact, Roman Reigns breaking it up. And then Strowman, even after he'd had some time to kind of recover and hit a move or two, I think it was on Reigns, was still kind of grabbing at his throat, trying to sell that hold. And so that was effective. He applied it later on again on Roman Reigns, and I believe it was Strowman breaking it up there as well. So the coquina clutch, despite Brock Lesnar just powering right out of it when he faced Joe. And I think they did the same finish over the weekend. We do have the couple of reports up on the final show at Joe Louis Arena that featured Brock Lesnar and Samoa Joe. You can find that at ProWrestling.net from over the weekend. But I think it was a very similar finish. And it wasn't a big, you know, what happened at the house shows happens at the house shows. But as far as the pay-per-view finish was concerned, it was like, oh man, protect that hold. It just seemed like Brock got out of it way too easy. Again, I'm not bothered by what they did at Joe Louis Arena, but as far as TV is concerned, this was a step toward kind of reestablishing the danger of the coquina clutch, and the fans are reacting to it. They're doing, I think they've done a good job of that, despite that one hiccup with the Lesnar finish. But Joe ended up being pinned by Reigns, as I mentioned. He knocked Strowman to the floor with the ring steps. And then he speared Samoa Joe and pinned him clean. And I mentioned earlier I would discuss why I think this could actually be a positive for Joe. If you've watched enough WWE programming over the years, it's certainly not uncommon for them to basically have a guy, you know, have somebody in the challenger position lose when they plan on making them by giving them a championship at the pay-per-view. And I'm not saying that that's definitely happening here with Joe, not by any means, but there just seems to be a real formula at play here with WWE. If you see, now this is, you know, there's still some time between now and the pay-per-view, so that's why I don't feel very confident in this necessarily. But, you know, there have been how many times you've seen somebody win on a go-home show in a tag match or something. You're like, well, that person's not winning at the pay-per-view. They won here. And so it's kind of a little bit of that approach that kind of makes me, that made me watch this going, you know, it's not even worth getting losing any sleep over Samoa Joe losing a match here, because they may have bigger plans for him. And I know there was plenty of people upset on the internet and all that, on Twitter and all that. I just say let it play out. The thing that I like about Joe as champion, as I've been saying for a while now, if they go in that direction, is that of the four men in this match, he's the guy that I think the fans, because he's newest to WWE and he has had some losses, they're the guy that people are going to view as being vulnerable. So if he faces Lesnar in a rematch, well, they're going to think there's a good chance they see a title change. If he faces Reigns, well, Reigns beat him here. And yeah, Joe did have some wins over Roman, but it was because Braun Strowman kept getting involved. And then if he faces Braun Strowman, well, damn near everybody feels like an underdog against Braun Strowman. And so I think that's a good thing. Doesn't mean they're going to change the title right away if they were to put it on Joe. But I think it's his early title defenses would be a little more appealing in that manner than it would have, like, they put the title on Braun Strowman. Because they put the title on Braun, you're just going to kind of, I think, naturally assume, whether you're right or wrong, I think it's just natural to assume that they just put it on him. He's going to keep the championship for a while. I don't know that fans are going to have that same feeling when it comes to Samoa Joe, if indeed they put it on him. I guess the only negative here is I did like that Joe, even though, again, it was tainted by, they just would leave this out, all of his wins over Roman were tainted by Braun Strowman interference. I think he only had a couple, maybe three. And so, but they just conveniently leave that out. Well, now he doesn't really have anything that he can, that matchup between Reigns and Joe, it'll still be good, but I kind of like that, boy, Joe's got his number when they'd kind of play up that story. Now you can't really do that, but it'll be fun. I thought it was an entertaining match. Reigns gets the win. I don't know what it means for SummerSlam, but yeah, just something tells me that, don't lose sleep for Joe. And as far as Roman is concerned, just because he won here doesn't mean he's winning at SummerSlam. Of course, it could be. Well, they want to give him some momentum going into the show because they plan on putting it on him. Just doesn't seem to be the way they do things on a regular basis, especially with these multi-person matches. But we'll see. Then we had the broadcast team deliver some hype for the main event, and with Big Show against Cass, and we found out Enzo would be a part of this as well. Backstage, we had Enzo thanking Big Show for having his back, and they just had a brief exchange. And Show told Cass that he likes him because he keeps it real, and he said Big Cass needs a lesson in respect. And then we ended up with some hype for the Bring It to the Table show that was on WWE Network after Raw, and they did hype that Jon Jones and Brock Lesnar would be one of the topics of their potential fight in UFC. They went to a commercial. And JoJo introduced Elias. No, she didn't forget his last name. Well, unless the graphic guy did too. Apparently, and the broadcast team. I think someone may have said, was it Cole that slipped? I thought I heard one Samson, but I may have, again, the ears are still ringing a bit from the concert. Great show, by the way. Man, if GNR's coming to your town, that is my favorite concert now of all time. I just had an absolute blast, and I've seen them back in the 90s, and I've seen Axl's version over the years, and man, this was just a great show. Now, that said, Elias, he did his guitar bit. He's not exactly Slash, but he did sing a song about Pittsburgh to get some heat. As you can imagine, it was not a positive song about his hometown. He called the people garbage and said it gets worse every time he goes there. He ended up being interrupted by Kalisto. And of course, it was Elias defeating Kalisto in 8:15. No surprise to see him go over. He used the Drift Away Neckbreaker. I don't know if they've been calling it that all along, but it's the first time I remember hearing it on the main roster. The Drift Away, a play on the Drifter. So he went from being the Drifter, Elias Sampson, to now basically just being Elias. They really don't reference the Drifter part either. It reminded me of Big E Langston becoming Big E. And there's plenty of other examples over the years when they just decide, this guy doesn't need a last name. So Elias Sampson is now just Elias. And that will save me a little bit of corrections when it comes to some of our live events, because just as I wanted to do initially, I think we all do, we're just used to writing Sampson with a P. And there was no P in their spelling of Samson, the Samson name. So thank you, WWE. You're saving me that. Oh, there it is, and hitting delete. I feel better already. Backstage, we had Alexa Bliss interviewed. I don't remember if it was Charlie Caruso, probably was interviewing her about Bayley earning the title shot at SummerSlam. She was giddy because she said she's dominated Bayley in the past, and she also pointed out that Sasha Banks was on some promotional tour, and so she couldn't save her when Bayley ended up facing Nia Jax later in the show. And I think that's I like that approach because yeah, it's not really at this point Bliss has been dominant in the ring with Bayley, so why should all of a sudden now that she won a couple of matches and earned this title shot, why would she all of a sudden look at her differently? So I think it's true to the character. Graves hype that match is coming up after a break. We ended up with a little bit of promotional work for Pure Country, Pure Heart, starring Shawn Michaels and Willie Nelson together at last. Available at a Walmart near you. I'm not making that part up. I think it's a Walmart exclusive. I might be wrong on that, but I do remember them hyping Walmart. So yeah, if you're big into country and you're big into heart, you can't be into country without being big on heart, can you? Well, either way, you can go check out the movie with Shawn Michaels and Willie Nelson. Then we had the broadcast team recap the developments of the Rollins and Ambrose saga. They went backstage where Rollins thanked Ambrose for coming to his aid earlier. Ambrose said Rollins won the match without his help, and then Rollins asked why he came out to help him, and Ambrose said Rollins is the architect, and he put himself in the position where he had to come out, or he would have looked like the jerk. So Ambrose basically accusing Rollins of manipulating the situation to the point that Dean had to come out and make the save, and Ambrose assumed that Rollins was going to say that he would have done the same thing for him, but he said, "The hell you would have." And so, yeah, that was it. Ambrose still not having it when it comes to Seth, and poor Seth just standing there looking like a sad puppy dog the whole time Ambrose is dressing him down. I found it interesting, I don't know if it was here or earlier in the show, Michael Cole was the one going, you know, it's been 3 years. I think it's time for Ambrose to get over this. Rollins has learned his lessons, that sort of a thing. Graves was the one who was a little more understanding of what Ambrose is, the approach that Ambrose is taking to this, if memory serves. So it's just interesting. This is one that when they first started teaming them up together, it's like, eh. And it wasn't that long ago. I just really wasn't all that fired up about it. But I like kind of this slow build to wherever this is going. I assume they eventually get on the same page again to challenge for the tag titles. When that happens, I don't know. Is Ambrose proven right? Does Rollins turn on him? I mean, let's face it, Seth's been a better heel than a babyface. Is Ambrose the one who turns? Do they just work together and work great? And the long plan is to do something with them and Roman Reigns. I don't know, but I'm definitely enjoying this. In the sixth match, it was Bayley defeating Nia Jax by countout in 9:40. This is when the crowd basically went to bed. I don't think it was necessarily because of the talent involved here. I think it may have been more a case of just fatigue setting in on show, and also realizing that, yeah, we saw the good triple threat and Big Show and Big Cass as our main event. And there's only, you know, I mean, again, I thought it was a SummerSlam match, and it's not that it's terrible. It's just like, yeah, I mean, I think being on earlier in the show helps that as well. It doesn't feel main event worthy even on TV right now. I shouldn't say main event worthy. It just doesn't feel like a hot main event. It's not one that you're like, oh, man, we're getting that as our main event in our town. That's great. I don't think too many people would feel that way. But Bayley, you know, I think she's gotten a little bit of momentum here over the couple of weeks coming into this. This was a step back, not only in terms of fan reaction, which, again, may have been due to the marathon more than her and Jax, but also because she just sold. I mean, she ended up selling a shoulder injury throughout the match and was working with one arm, and the crowd wasn't receptive to it. And so she sold and she sold and she sold. She ended up showing some heart and had a comeback, but she won by countout. You know, and so Jax dominates this match. Bayley doesn't look like a strong number one contender. She really didn't gain anything from this. In fact, she may have taken a half step back from that momentum she'd been building. Oh, and they did have Alexa Bliss show up and try to blindside Bayley, but Bayley saw her coming, and then this was all before the finish, so not much to Bliss's interference. But the one notable thing is that Alexa and Nia stood in the ring together afterward, and that we've seen where others have tried to do that with Nia, and she's destroyed them. So I guess for now, the characters of Alexa Bliss and Nia Jax are on the same page. Well, at least for this week. We had a brief Big Cass promo backstage where he said that his grandmother said you're judged by the company you keep, which makes Big Show a miscreant. And then it was time for a little bit of 205 Live Hype, just the same match, Tozawa Daivari for Tuesday night. And then we got the broadcast team recapping Jason Jordan's appearance on Miz TV. I'm like, of all the things to recap on this show, that's the one, huh? Interesting. Then it was time for the main event. We had some ring entrances. Enzo was out first. He did a pre-show mic routine, and he talked about how Cass has done some horrible things, and he talked about how he'd done some horrible things, and he started talking about something with a banana peel and never eating the bruised part of a banana. I don't know. All of this was so that he could work in some line about the city of black and yellow, referring to Pittsburgh. Steelers and Penguins and Pirates colors. I don't think I'm forgetting anyone, am I? It was good for a small pop. That's about it. Then Big Show came out, and then at the very top of the hour, beginning of the overrun, Big Cass made his entrance to that generic peppy rock song. Something's not clicking here with some of these new entrance themes they have. And as far as the main event is concerned, it was Big Cass beating Big Show by DQ in 5 minutes and 5 seconds. Cass started to get the advantage, and that's when Enzo attacked Big Cass from behind for the DQ. Cass ended up dumping Enzo to the mat and taunted him, and then Show got to his feet. Cass ran into his knockout punch. So both big men fell down. It was described as kind of a Hail Mary type of a swing for the fences by Big Show type of thing. And a desperation knockout, I guess is what Graves called it. But it connected, and so both men were down. Big Show's music ended up playing to end the segment, and that closed the show. So you had Cass getting a win by DQ, probably controlling, if memory serves, did he get the majority of the offense, or was it fairly split? At any rate, Cass wins by DQ, but Show lands a knockout punch, so neither guy really gains much of anything. I mean, can they go back to this at SummerSlam? Sure. Do I care if they do? I can't say this left me anxious to see more. But again, tough crowd. For being this late in the show, I thought they were fairly lively early, so it wasn't just a bad crowd all night. It just seemed like a crowd that grew tired as the 3-hour marathon that is Raw dragged on. But overall, not at the level of some of the shows we've seen here lately, but not an awful show either. I'd just say kind of an average show is how I label it, C-plus territory. Again, didn't think it was terrible, like the triple threat. That was a big match. I was surprised they actually gave us the full match with a clean finish and all of that. I like Miz TV and the Jordan segment. I really can't say I liked it, but I'm still intrigued by where this is all going and what they intend to do with Chase and Jordan. So I didn't find the segment to be a strong one, yet I'm still enjoying the ride as far as, all right, what do they have planned for this Chase and Jordan guy? Are they serious about making him a babyface? Is this all going to be a ruse? And I really like what they're doing with Ambrose and Rollins. Still finding that to be pretty intriguing. Where is this going? I like that, again, Ambrose isn't just willing to forgive and forget so quickly. They're taking their time building to them reuniting, and again, even if they do, and I assume they're going to, for a title match at SummerSlam, where does it go from there? And so this is as excited as I've been about the Rollins and Ambrose characters in some time. It's just, we saw Ambrose feud for far too long with Miz. Not that they had bad matches all the time or anything like that, just felt like it overstayed its welcome. And Rollins just really hasn't found his groove as a babyface. He's had moments, but it just he was certainly a much stronger heel than he's been a babyface thus far. I think this is a pretty compelling situation, a compelling situation they have these two guys in heading into SummerSlam. And I also like what this does for Cesaro and Sheamus as the Raw Tag Champions. They're not just feuding with the Hardys, and then, oh, wait, we don't have any other babyface teams. Now you'll actually have a couple, kind of a makeshift team, a couple of singles wrestlers teaming up, two-thirds of the Shield. And so I think it gets them in the spotlight again as well. But that's going to do it for now, everyone. I am not quite sure of the plan for Tuesday just yet. I was hoping to get April on for a Raw 2-for-20 to get her take on the show, but she had a class this evening. We will definitely get her on one of these weeks. It will not be Wednesday because I will be a guest on Wade Keller's podcast over at Podcast One. So be sure to check that out. It's Wade Keller's Pro Wrestling Podcast. It's no longer a live show, for those of you who remember that format, but you will be able to hear that show. I don't know if it's Wednesday afternoon or Thursday. I'll keep you guys abreast. I'm not even sure. I just know we get together on Wednesday, as we always do, to record the show. And I'm guessing it comes out Wednesday. But I don't know. I should know, and I don't. So I apologize for that. But it's late. I'm beat from Guns N' Roses. I'm going to go watch Game of Thrones and get some sleep. I will talk to you guys very soon. Thank you so much for listening. Take care.